And as we go to air, the world this morning is coming to grips with the joint American and Israeli strikes across Iran and Iran's retaliatory missile and drone strikes in Israel and in multiple countries across the Middle East. Iranian state media has cited the Red Crescent reporting 201 people killed and 747 injured in strikes across Iran in 24 of the 31 provinces in that country, and one particular school being hit with many killed there. An emergency meeting of the UN Security Council has been convened and is due to occur in about an hour's time, beginning with an update from UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who's already condemned the military escalation in the Middle East, saying the use of force by the United States and Israel against Iran and the subsequent retaliation by Iran undermine international peace and security. Prime Minister Albanese tweeted last night that Australia supports the US acting to prevent Iran continuing to threaten international peace and security. This is a rapidly unfolding story even as we go to air. Multiple Israeli media sources are saying that the Ayatollah Khamenei may have been killed in a strike. The ABC has been unable to confirm these reports and they have been currently denied by authorities in Iran. We are joined now by Bilal Saab, who's a former Pentagon official in the first Trump administration, where he was overseeing US security cooperation in the Middle East. Bilal is now Senior Managing Director of Trends US, the consultancy, and an Associate Fellow at Chatham House. Bilal joins us from Washington, D.C. Thanks very much for joining us.
I appreciate you having me on your show.
Bilal, President Trump has described this action as a noble mission. What do you make of the joint American and Israeli strikes? What do you see the mission as being?
Well, we don't have to, you know, overthink this. I think we could just follow the words of the president. He's very much now committed to the goal of changing the regime of Tehran. And he's made his speech to the American people. We would have liked to see this a bit earlier and with a bit more clarity and perhaps even some realism into it, because the very goal of changing the regime, as noble as he might claim it to be, is not as straightforward as it sounds.
Yeah, well, there's no precedent, is there, for achieving a change of regime purely by airstrikes?
Exactly right. The track record of air power alone changing regimes is not exactly stellar, and I don't think this is going to be an exception, given the strategic depth of the country, the population density, and the very resilience and institutional infrastructure of the Iranian regime. I want us to be very clear not to confuse regime decapitation, which seems to have just happened, I don't know, over the next few minutes. We heard that the Supreme Leader was attacked. Let's not confuse that with regime collapse. One doesn't automatically lead to the other. As I said, there's a good bit of institutional infrastructure in this regime that could survive a decapitation at the top.
Bilal, what do you make of the scale of the US and Israeli attacks on Iran and the apparent commitment to ongoing attacks for a number of days?
I don't want to sound slipping about it or flipping or just oversimplify it, but we mean business. This is a president who clearly is going all in. He's not going to stop until there is some kind of, I would say, set of conditions in Iran that would at least lead to regime change. It may not happen overnight. It may not happen next week, but the hope is, and I'm not going to call it a plan. I think it's a hope at this point. The hope is that if the United States and Israel do their job of degrading the military capabilities of the regime, then it's up to the Iranian people to rise up again and take over. I say it's a hope because there's all sorts of holes that in this assumption, and all sorts of risks, and it could get really messy. And I promise you that the Iranians have thought about that scenario and they're doing everything they can to counter it.
Yes, indeed. While the timing was not known, certainly this seems to be an attack that was very much foreshadowed and prepared for. What's your assessment of the Iranian military and diplomatic response so far?
Oh, forget the Iranian military response. I think they've always known that they are the inferior party here and that their options are limited. But they're going to use whatever they have, militarily speaking, to achieve a more psychological political objective, which is to exact a high enough price on President Trump to force him to discontinue the war effort. And how did they do that? They precisely what they're doing. I mean, I'm not shocked at all because I wrote about it just 2 days ago, precisely what kind of a strategy they would employ to counter a massive campaign like this. They would regionalize the conflict, right? So kind of like operating from the principle of, I'm not going down on my own, I'm bringing down everybody else with me. Causing a shock to the international economy by going after oil fields and civilian targets across the Gulf, which they have. But then also trying to cause some havoc in the Strait of Hormuz, where a lot of international shipping traverses, and it's quite instrumental to the international economy. That's the strategy that they're hoping to achieve that will counter Iran's, if you recall not too long ago when he said, I'm seeking decisive military action, as in like, I want to get this over with as quickly as possible. So their goal is to try to prevent that and drag this conflict as long as possible, and then hope that whatever military capabilities that they have, they could use wisely and in a very gradual fashion. They're not going to throw everything at us with the kitchen, but the kitchen sink. They're going to be very methodical with every target that they use in order to achieve that objective of regionalizing things, globalizing things, and then essentially just telling the world that if you're going to bring us down, we're going to bring down the world with us. Mm-hmm.
Bilal, an Iranian foreign ministry spokesman has called the strikes on Iran a betrayal of diplomacy and the whole UN system. Is that right?
I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't think it's unfair. I mean, this happened also last year, as you recall. I mean, they were talking, and all of a sudden they started shooting. Give credit to the administration, whether you like it or not. Put aside morals, put aside ethics, put aside international norms. This was a masterful display of, I would say, psychological operations and diversion, right? So every single one of us, including myself, yourself, were confused until the very last minute whether President Trump was going to actually continue with diplomacy or strike. We had no clue until the very last minute. Even the Iranians themselves. I mean, heck, we had the Omani foreign minister come here to Washington, go on national television screens and say that we're actually making progress. We didn't even wait for him to go back home until we started shooting. So this was a massive diversion. I think obviously all along they knew that what they wanted to do. You know, the whole diplomacy thing was a charade until the second carrier made it to the region. Is it a slap in the face of diplomacy? Yeah, I mean, that's a reasonable, fair, assumption. Yeah. But there's nothing fair in war.
Bilal, are these attacks legal under U.S. domestic law? What do we know about the extent of briefing of Congress and what limits there might be on the president's ability to act in relation to, without congressional approval?
Well, it depends who you ask, my friend. This could be a really complex. This could be really complex answer or a very short one. If you're going to ask the Democrats, every single one of them is going to tell you that this is illegal according to U.S. law. Not a single authorization for the use of force from Congress. Not even revoking the 1973 War Powers Resolution, which obviously I understand not many presidents have since it was issued. But not even an authorization to use force. Right? Biden had it when he struck targets in Iraq and Syria. President Bush had it in 2003 when he went to war against Iraq. Trump didn't even bother doing that. So there is a case to be made that these attacks are illegal because the president did not seek authorization from his colleagues in the legislative branch.
How do you think the Trump base in the Republican Party will react to this action, given the president's previous commitments or statements about not getting involved in foreign conflicts and what he described, I think, as stupid wars?
I love that question because I'll tell you this. He's starting off with the foundation of rock solid, you know, relationship with the GOP, right? Otherwise, he would not even have entertained something like this. But where it gets tricky, Julian, if this thing drags and if Iran survives this onslaught and the consequences start becoming more and more apparent, like politically, economically, and then the Iranians showing that they're actually winning, obviously, you know, winning with a huge caveat. And that that starts to look more and more like open-ended conflict and the stuff that the GOP and its constituencies really hate. If President Trump, and it's a huge if, this is why this is so unpredictable, if he achieves a modicum of success, or at least that he could spin it as a success, and then discontinue the war effort, I think this will be well received by even the most hardcore anti-war constituents of the MAGA movement.
Fascinating. Bilal Saab, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra in what is a obviously significant day and a situation which is unfolding as we speak.
My pleasure. I hope that was useful.
It certainly was. That's Bilal Saab, in particular, reminding us that there's a difference between decapitation of a regime and the collapse of an entire regime. We, of course, await the latest news from Iran and the region. Bilal is Senior Managing Director of Trends US, a former Pentagon official in the first Trump administration, and an Associate Fellow with Chatham House. It's 22 minutes past seven.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.